To be honest, in the very beginning, when we saw it with ultrasound for the first time, I couldn't understand it. It wasn't before Beagle came out, I really understood that I had become a dad. And it was a shock. I mean, I was really scared in the beginning. And that took quite a long time to get over. Scared of not being that present dad that I wanted, or having the strength or courage to develop him in a good way. I mean, it's a lot of things there. And you need to be a good husband as well. It's so many things. And doing your work as well, which you are passionate.
Welcome to the Dadwell Podcast. I'm your host, Antonio Garcia. Dadwell & Company is an independent media project at the intersection of creativity and fatherhood. The Dadwell Podcast features makers, artists, musicians, authors, filmmakers, and designers who are raising the creative bar while simultaneously raising small humans. Today I'm talking creativity and fatherhood with award-winning freelance photographer, Yuan Bavman. Since devising his own independent photography curriculum in high school, Yuan's passion for image making led him to the Nordic School of Photography, a coveted spot on the Moment agency roster, and a full-time staff position in editorial photography with Sydsvenskan, one of Sweden's largest newspapers. Now 100% independent, Yuan splits his time between client assignments, personal projects, and gallery work. When he needs a break from photography and family life, Yuan restores vintage motorcycles at Odd Luck Garage, a collaboration with 13 other fathers. Yuan is dad to two sons, age 8 and 4. In this episode, Yuan talks about the myriad roles photography's played in his life and career, a connection to his grandfather, an invitation to embed himself in other cultures, a narrative device for storytelling, and as a solution for his dyslexia, allowing him to express himself without the burden of the written word. Yuan also talks at length about Swedish Dads, a collection of photographs he self-published in 2016, documenting 45 Swedish men who took advantage of the country's generous parental leave system. Capturing the mundane, beautiful, and often lonesome moments of fatherhood, the images, book, and exhibit continue to change policy, shift cultural attitudes, and advocate for gender equality and the rights of women and children. His photographs are currently on exhibit at Chicago's Swedish American Museum, now through November. This is my first international interview. This is my first interview with a photographer. This is my first interview since December of 2019. It's an interview of firsts today, and I'm just really glad that you were willing to do it. Can you tell me about your own father or any father figures you had growing up?
Sure. I grew up in the countryside in the southern part of Sweden, a place called Östersmuth or Österlen, in a really green environment with a lot of animals around. My dad was back then an art teacher, and my mom was a craft teacher. So they worked office hours, but could actually have summer vacations and so on with us, me, my younger brother, and my bigger sister. And when I was born, my dad and my mom shared the leave equally. And my dad back then was kind of a pioneer in that area of being at home. It wasn't that common as it is today. I remember him taking me out for skating in the lakes during the wintertime and pay attention with me and so on. And paid a lot of effort into our bounds in a way. My mom, she died 8 years ago. So I only have my dad left. And we have good relationship still, even though it's definitely changing by me having kids as well. And you reflect quite much of your own relation to your father.
I want to get back to how that relationship has shifted or changed, but you grew up in an artistic and creative environment, it sounds.
Yeah, true. Yeah. My dad and my mom, when they turned 40, when we was not kids any longer, quit their job and became self-employed. And my dad became art production for movies, travel around the world doing films. And my mom was at home doing handcraft with felted wool.
Interesting. And how did you characterize your relationship with your dad growing up? It sounds like he was involved and took time away from work to raise you and guide you that way. But what was that like, having your dad around more?
I mean, I rely on my dad. He's been my role model growing up. He's been my favorite parent in a way, in terms of talking about creativities and works, those kind of things. But when it comes to feelings and emotional, I probably would choose my mom. Mm-hmm. And why it is like that, it's really hard to say. It's something that I felt more comfortable in talking about, or crying, or feeling really unpowerful.
Yeah. And you mentioned that over time, your relationship has evolved with your dad, and that now that you have children, it feels different. How would you describe those differences?
When I was a kid, my mom and dad was kind of the Green Movement's riot. And I mean, I just tag along quite often as a child. And it's been changed quite much with our relationship to our children. I would say that we as a parents in this generation are more involved, for bad and worse, in a way. We sometimes don't let our children make their own mind and really being on their own. And I was always referring to on-demand generation, because there's no waiting. You can fantasize, or you can play a game which doesn't have a start or have an ending. There's always rules. Mm-hmm. And when I grew up, I was growing up in the country, and I was out in the forest by myself, playing around with friends and my younger brother. That doesn't exist any longer in the same sense, because there's always like things to do on demand. You can watch TV on demand. And I wouldn't say that my dad's relationship was that kind of thing, because he did his stuff and I'm just tagged along in many ways.
It sounds like nature was almost a third parent for you. It sounds like that was another huge influence, is just being out, like you said, in a lot of green space. And
yeah, it was. I was out fishing quite often on my own. And yeah, played in the forest.
Mm-hmm. I guess, what do you see as the difference now raising your children, I'm assuming in a city, and their experience of nature or the wilderness, or even just alone time?
Yeah, I'm trying to see the benefit for my kids going out to the forest as often I can. My dad bought a cabin a couple of years ago, and we've been trying to go there quite often, just to have another way of living, that there's no internet or there's no phone connections, and you have to go to the bathroom outside, and there's no showers. I like that way, that my children can see the fun of it and not be afraid of it.
Yeah. And where did photography appear for you? It sounds like you've done it like your whole life, like since high school. When did it enter your life?
It entered quite early. And my grandfather, he had his own dark room. And whenever I went there, I thought it was kind of magic to go inside there with the red light and seeing the pictures evolve. In the high school, I think, I started this self-photography program with no teacher. And we tried to read from books how to develop pictures and order fluids and so on. And I got a camera from my granddad. And my dad, he was really into photography as well. So he helped me out doing a dark room in the basement at our home. So I stayed there for quite often. And then I took a internship in high school as well at a newspaper, where I actually really found my way of expressing myself, because I have a dyslexia, a really hard time reading and writing. So I understood that this is my way of telling a story. Mm. And a much easier way of telling a story. So I started to do documentary, and I understood the way of opening doors with a camera. because I really realized that I wanted to work with people and not only like commercials. I mean, really wanted to tell stories. So yeah, ever since I've been working with people, trying to tell their stories in a good way. As I said, it's like opening doors with a camera. You can actually have an excuse of be a part of someone's life, which you don't know. And that's a really magical moment. Every time I do it, it was like, wow, it's awakening that I can actually learn from someone else and not read a book. I can actually learn by doing time with them and be a part of their life. And that's the funny part. Before having kids, I was traveling quite much with the camera. And I thought it's so interesting in those situations I ended up in with the camera. You didn't need to know a special language. This is kind of international of taking pictures. And that's the best part of it, traveling around with the camera on your back. I'm really missing that as well.
Yeah.
Because as having kids, it's kind of difficult to be away. It takes time to be a documentary photographer. You need to focus on the theme and pay tribute to that time in a way. It's time consuming of being a documentary photographer. Therefore, it's not possible to meet a person for a day or two. You need even more, a week or month, to do a really good story.
Yeah, that was such a beautiful way you described photography, giving you a way to express yourself that doesn't require reading and writing, and that the camera is this key to unlocking places and people, and it transcends language. You have a camera present and people invite you in, whether they can communicate verbally with you or not. It's just an invitation to spend time. And I hadn't thought about how critical being embedded in a person's life for longer than you imagine in order to really capture, like you said, pay tribute to them appropriately isn't something you can do in an afternoon. You know, maybe a quick portrait, but not this kind of deeper...
Yeah, deeper learning of the person. You need to even express feelings, trying to send the person's identity forward to the audience. And that is hard. And it takes time to understand the person first, and then also trying to capture that in a sense of pictures.
You graduated from the Nordic School of Photography in 2007. Is that right?
That's right.
Yeah. And we're both represented by an agency and also started working for the largest newspaper in Sweden. Is that true too?
Yeah, Sydsvenskan, which is one of the largest ones.
What was that like making the transition from photography school, where I imagine you had a lot of creative freedom, into both agency life, which is driven by commercial pursuits, and then the newspaper, which is driven by human interest and newsmaking and journalism?
I would say that I adapt to the editorial environment quite easy, because I've been working as a staff photographer before, as an internship and so on. And I saw it as quite big freedom, because back then the photo desk was really good and forward thinking. And I got a lot of time and freedom in my way of telling a story. It's been changing. I don't work there any longer. And the collective of the photographers is gone, as in many newspapers around the world, as the economy went really bad. But in school, I had time and I can actually try out different angles and the things maybe I wasn't totally sure of, and trying out different pattern of telling a story. And that is really important to have that time. But I really enjoyed starting working with it as well. But in the very end, I would say that I was afraid of losing my passion for photography, becoming old and becoming too lazy in terms of thinking new, being self-employed. I came back to the passion and the entrepreneurish mindset and trying to do new angles of a story and not tell it in the same way as everyone else, or trying to find a theme or a context of the pictures to put them in. I mean, I have always tried to both provoke the audience, but also I would rather tell about others and understand others. So working as an editorial photographer was something that came quite natural.
And about a year after you left the newspaper, your son was born. Is that right?
Yeah, almost directly. Huh. Yeah.
Those are two pretty big transitions.
Yeah, both me and my wife, we met each other at the newspaper and we lost our job 2 or 3 weeks after we find out that we were pregnant. So it was a really hard time in a way of rethinking and reboost yourself. But back then we were kind of tired of the situation at the newspaper. So in the very end, we are lucky that it goes as it goes for us and that we could find the power and the strength of restart. That's where it comes in of parenting and sharing the leave and sharing the burden. In Sweden, as you probably know, we could be at home for 480 days in total. So that's almost 1.5 years off from work. We shared the leave equally with both our children. When my wife, she had something to do at work, she could just go in for half a day or a day, and I could do the same. And that helped us in getting back to work easily. And that's the same for us right now in COVID time. My youngest one had a cold for a week and we couldn't go back to school with him. So we had to take turns. My wife was fully booked and so do I. But it helps. You need to do this together.
Is your wife also a photographer? What
no,
does she
she's
do?
A writer.
Ah, that's a nice compliment.
Yeah, true. Yeah. We've been working a couple of things together, but we tried to have it separately because we want to have something to talk to when we're off work.
Sure. Sure. That's a good point. So when you think back to that time, leaving the paper, just before that, what was it like when you found out that the two of you were having a child? What was that for you?
To be honest, in the very beginning, when we saw it with ultrasound for the first time, I couldn't understand it. It wasn't before Beagle came out. I really understood that I became a dad. And it was a shock. I mean, I was really scared in the beginning. And that took quite a long time to get over. Scared of not being that present dad that I wanted. Or having the strength or courage to develop him in a good way or matter. I mean, it's a lot of things there. And you need to be a good husband as well. It's so many things. And doing your work as well, which you are passionate. So it took really long time to understand that. And that's something that I was so much easier, my role as a dad, having the second child.
What did you learn the first time with Vigo that you could apply 4 years later?
All kids are individuals and they have a special character, which you need to know. And you don't know them directly. This is something you learn by creating these bounds and mistakes and do it better again next time and understand the needs of the child. And after 9 months, I understood him much better and he understood me as well. And he relied on me. I could see that he could come to me seeking for comfort. And that was both joyful, but also that I grow as a parent.
You mentioned all these things that were going through your mind, like being a better partner and husband, being as good of a parent as you wanted, but also your work and your passion. What went through your mind with regards to photography and that freedom that you described having with the camera now that you knew in 9 months I'm going to be having a child?
Yeah.
What was that like?
In the same way, I was scared of that as well. I mean, photography has been me. I've been even with photography. That is not only something I do. This is something that I relate to myself with. Losing photography would be losing some part of myself. So I was afraid of losing that because I realized how much time I need to devote to photography in order to do the passionate work and not just doing photography for a living.
And did you do anything to preserve that or ensure that you wouldn't lose yourself? And it sounds like your identity as a person is tied to the act of photo making. And
there's something happening of being a parent as well. I was really self-absorbed of my work and my career of doing good photography, getting awards, getting my voice heard. But being a dad and being on parental leave, you need to leave that behind because you are devoted to someone else and they rely on you. You need to put another one in the first row. And that's something that brought me to a better person, a better understanding of others, that there's more than me in the world. And not only my passionate work, that this is something which is bigger than that, something that will live beyond my work. Mm. And I'm happy of having a better relationship to my work as well nowadays, that I can actually devote time, but I can also see there's something else important going on in my life.
I imagine that the system in place in Sweden that allows you to take that much time and be covered, if you will, to some degree financially, or, you know, there's a support mechanism, made the transition from full-time work to, in ways, full-time parenting. And then eventually you got back to photography, or did you find a way to kind of keep it going even as a new dad?
Coming back from parental leave 9 months later, I needed to contact the few clients I had. And I realized that there wasn't that much money and work coming in. So I have always been trying to do long-term projects when I don't have that much to do. And something that grew quite much during my parental leave was the question of why. Why didn't dad take advantage of our system? Why was it so few dads that actually wanted to be at home with their kids? Even talking to my friends, they decided not to be at home in that long-term period because they have different reasons. Some reasons was that, oh, I need to go back to work, or we're losing money, or my wife wants to be at home more than me, and so on. And I realized that it's not only about having a system as ours in Sweden. It's about changing the way how men see themselves and changing the way of masculinity. That it's something that has to be told, and creating role models for dads to become. And that's the thing with everything. You don't want to be alone and you don't want to be the first. You want to be in a group of people. That's easier. And being a dad, it's really different depending on where you look. In the bigger inner city, there's a lot of dads going out with the strollers in the public playgrounds and so on. You can see dads all over the place on their own. But not in the same extent in the suburbs or the countryside. It's not that common. That has to be changed in order to find the scenario normal. With the project, I didn't want to create like the super dads. I wanted to evoke a discussion of why we see these men so special.
And so you did it yourself, took this time and spent it with your first son, and saw this difference between what the system provides, but then what men actually take advantage of. And there's this discrepancy there. We're allowed this time, and yet we don't take it fully. And if we do, we don't always share it equally with our spouse. And then, just like you said, there's places like cities where you see these examples more regularly, and then you move outward from the city and it's different. You don't see it the same or as much. And so you're living this in real time with your own son and your relationship with your wife and your own work. And so when did you decide, I'm going to start to document this? I'm going to take pictures of my fellow dads and I'm going to build a body of work. This is going to be, to use your words, another long-term project for me to invest time and tell these stories.
The moment starting thinking about it was me being at home and realized how lonely I was and that I was lacking information from dads to dads. There was a lot of information about parenting, but that was often directed to women. And even being at the nursery, they always talked to my wife and not to me. And I felt quite out of the region of being a parent. And as I said before, being a parent is quite hard and it is a full-time work. And being at home, I realized I couldn't take any pictures. So I put up posters on this open daycare paid by the government in Sweden. You can go there, hang out with other parents, meet parents on parental leave, and drink coffee and play around with the kids. So I put up posters there and went there during the morning session and trying to find dads who was on parental leave for more than 6 months. It ended up in 45 dads, so it's quite many and a lot of pictures. And I just took out one picture per dad. It's just a fragment of their life. It's not a story about one dad. It's a story about 45 dads. But when you put them together, all the pictures, you're getting a sense of how it is to be at home. And that is something that I wanted to express. Laughter, failures, but also the emotional stages of a man's life. The stages which you often don't see.
Yeah, I think the boredom, the loneliness, the monotony of it, the parts that are not celebrated in popular culture, those are the ones that go unseen and just you sort of suffer through those on your own. And I appreciate looking at your work that it wasn't just the highlights, the best parts of being a dad, sort of cinematic moments. It was the most mundane, regular parts of life.
Now, I tried to have the whole spectra, those pictures you don't often see in Instagram or social media, the hard work that women has to do or have done or still do, the unpaid work as well, which comes by being at home, the laundry, the grocery shopping, all those kind of things that a lot of men take for granted.
What was it like recruiting these men? What was the reception like? I mean, obviously it was good. You got 45 people to go along with it, but were they curious or did they understand right away why you care to do this?
To be honest, the dads that didn't want to be a part of the story was the best. The one who didn't saw it as something special. The dad that decided to be at home because they wanted and not because the society tells them to do it. Those dads was really hard to find. I had to struggle for them to be a part of the story. They were really good. And then when I had like 25 pictures, I tried to try it out and see if it worked in a newspaper. And it became quite big, bigger than I expected. So a lot of dads contacted me and saying, "Wow, I can't be a part of this. I could easily help you out." And when I met them, I really realized that I couldn't take any picture of them because they had this vision of how they wanted to be presented.
Interesting.
They saw it as a competition in a way. And yeah. I didn't want to tell that story. I wanted to, as I said, have that discussion and not creating these supermodels. Not, this is something we should see as normal.
Yeah. Yuan, I can really appreciate your commitment to this project, the way you've described it, because I've had people reach out to be on the show. And I think for them, it's been more about leaving some kind of legacy or capturing their story in a way that might leave out some of the hard parts. And I've made some interviews and never turned them into episodes because it's just not true to the project, which is about the struggle, sacrifice, and normalizing what it's like to be a creative, entrepreneurial person and also a dad who's imperfect. Mm-hmm. And so I love that you committed to that and said, you know what, these some of these pictures aren't going to work. You know, yeah. Like some of these stats, they're not going to be the subjects that I need to tell this more complete story.
Yeah, it's actually was 50 dads in the very end, and I had to leave out 5 of them because when I choose the picture that I wanted, they didn't accept it because they thought it didn't express as good as they thought they were in a way, or how they wanted to be presented. Mm-hmm. So I had to have a discussion with them, and in the very end, I had to leave them away from the story.
You alluded to this, that unexpected popularity or interest in this body of work. I remember reading about it on CNN's website years before I had an idea to make Dadwell, but it was certainly a subconscious input and inspiration for the show. I saw these images and I thought, this is exactly what people need to see, is like the very everyday side of parenting, but in particular fatherhood. And I think I filed it away as an idea to explore more deeply on my own. And so in some ways, that glimpse that you provided into Swedish Dads was, I think, a starting point for Dadwell. I don't know if I told you that ahead of the interview, but just to see like, okay, there's someone else out here who's trying to capture the realness here and the essence of what it is to be simultaneously a man and a provider, parent, and not always good at any of it, you know? Mm-hmm. So thank you for that body of work. I think it opened up a big conversation.
Nice to hear. Yeah, it's been tremendous, the impact of it. And I didn't expect that. I thought it was something for Sweden. And then I ended up being a kind of gender advocate for a story that I didn't expect. And it's became kind of politics around it. And it's been difficult sometimes. And it's been really learning in those occasions I've been in. But in the very end, it's nice to see that it's been changing. Even the policies in countries has been changed. And just being a brick of that policy change is really cool. Mm-hmm. And seeing the discussions that I wanted to start go on further on and being a really big thing in the country. And there's a lot of organization, Dadwell and so on, in different other countries that has started. I'm not saying that I am the beginning of it, but in order to speed up the process, I'm hopefully a part of that. And I'm really grateful for that because I think it's really important issue. And it's not only about parenting and equal rights and so on, but it's also about, as I said, masculinity and the future of our world, of sustainability in the country. Yeah, it's huge. The issue is a lot of things, domestic violence to women's right to equal wage and so on.
Yeah, it's profound. I agree. And it's heartening and it gives me hope to see these shifts. You know, the United States is a long way off from places like Sweden, places like Japan, Korea, who give a year or more of time. I think I can think of only one company, you know, Netflix, that gives an entire year of leave to a parent. And everybody else is, you know, it feels like 3 months is a big deal. And I lucked out when both my children were born. I had holiday and policy and a couple of other things line up where I was able to take a sizable amount of time. And even then it felt like not enough. So I can't imagine what it's like for parents and particularly fathers who don't even have that option.
It's not only about parents' rights. It's also about talking about children's rights in terms of, isn't that a right for children to have both parents present? I mean, also about economy, and if you would look upon it in a long term, I have understood that companies will actually gain profit of having a better policy for parents. I mean, in Sweden, we talk quite much about family-friendly companies at the moment that allows parents to be flexible, working from home and so on. And that brings out the best employees, the one that's want to do a career, but still having a family. And actually, they gain the best employees, and not having the best salary, but having the best policy. And I think that's something we will see more of.
I sure hope so. I really do. It's remarkable. So you were 30 when Vigo was born, is that?
Yeah, 29.
You kind of put some things on pause career-wise and jumped into being a parent, splitting the time fairly with your wife, and you're endeavoring to be a dad and to try this new role. And you're also launching an independent practice, which is another form of creating something from scratch and living into, you know, a new role as entrepreneur. What was it like getting your business off the ground at the same time that you're, you know, getting your family off the ground?
Well, as we in Sweden have paid leave, it makes me not lose too much money, and coming back to work as well with a buffer. And I would say that when I worked, I really worked. And having a time where you need to go home was kind of good for me as well, because I was more sufficient at work, because I needed to go back home at a certain time to pick up the kids from the kindergarten or preparing food and so on. I mean, there was no time of thinking of my work while at home, because impossible to think of something else. So that helped me as well of keeping the passionate work. And sometimes you get overloaded as well with your work. And I would say that having that good quality of having work, but still leave that behind and pick it up the day after is good.
Yeah. When you were focused on the business and the photography, you were 100% there, and you had to turn that off or put it on pause or leave some for tomorrow when you pivoted back into being parent 100%. And you it sounds like you kind of switched back and forth, and one forced you to pace yourself.
Yeah, and even rethink the thing you did, meanwhile, pausing it. As for you cutting this piece together, it's kind of good to pause it and take it the day after, because you need to rethink maybe your line of how you want to present it, or do I losing something, missing out with something? And did I really understood it correctly and so on?
Right. Yeah, it forces maybe a more critical look at things when you have a little more time. Yeah, that's interesting. Besides disrupting your career and giving you this focus on fathers, which gave way to an entire body of work and a book and a traveling exhibition and everything else, what role did Vigo and later Manfred have in your creative work? Like, do your children play a part in it in any particular way?
Maybe not yet, but I hope to in the future. I mean, perhaps doing projects that are a little bit more childish, I can actually develop that side of me, the childish way of thinking, or devote yourself to something. Me and my oldest son, we took up skateboarding again with him because he wanted to skate. And now he's passionate about it. He doesn't do anything else except skateboarding. And it's fun in that sense, because I can actually do stuff with him in the same level as him as well. Or even now, he's even better than me. But it's fun to devote yourself into the things that you not necessarily do if you don't have kids. Being a child again, you can devote yourself to your children and their way of thinking.
It's interesting, your work has focused on, you know, the realities of life and lifestyles, and, you know, documenting people's stories in this journalistic way or this editorial way. And kids, you know, they're imaginative and creative, and when they're really little, they live in their own minds. They're not caught up in documentary and
reality and society, you know, they sort of float above that. And I wonder if that creativity or that imaginative expression might find its way into your reality-based documentary work.
I haven't seen it yet, but I hope it will come when my kids growing up and there's more time for me to develop that stage as well. Because, I mean, now I'm in their presence quite much. It's kind of hard to be in my own fantasy or fantasize on my own. But I think I learn, especially now Manfred, who's 4, is in that stage of mind, which there's no true and false. He can have that story, which goes on forever. But for him, it's really true, and it's a true story. But he goes on telling that story. And I really like to hear him talk and describe things that hasn't happened, but just in his mind.
You mentioned that the commitment to a subject isn't in hours, but in maybe weeks or a month of documentation, and how much you traveled for your work. And you even described in this kind of wistful way your father's travel when he was more involved in filmmaking. And I imagine that came to a stop when you had children. Is that fair to say?
In a way, but also that my mom died when we had kids for the first time. The roles of the family became quite different. And you understood what the parts where my mom came in and when my dad came in and what kind of relationship you had with them. That wasn't something you thought of when she was alive. But when she passed away, I realized what I was lacking with my dad, or the things that made me happy with my dad. So in that sense, it changed having kids. But I would say it changed more to not have both my parents present.
Yeah, you mentioned that your relationship to your dad evolved or changed once you had children. What did you see?
To look upon my dad as a parent, I do mistakes and don't leave my kids alone to figure things out for themselves. I'm trying to be there too much in a sense. That's something I learned now. I don't want to have my children as best friends. They need to have their own best friends. You should devote yourself to your child, but maybe sometimes leave them alone as well, that they can actually go around and don't have anything to do, and they have to figure it out for themselves. Because if you just put new stuff to them to do, or paint hair, or do this, or play a little bit of this, or there's no time for fantasies and no time for figure things out for themselves, finding their own way of living. My dad learned me how to be creative by just being there and not telling me how to do it. Like, I'm here to help you out, but you have to figure it out for yourself. Here's the saw, here's the hammer, but try to find your own way of doing it.
The expectation was that you would observe and model yourself after him rather than follow some step-by-step instructions he provided. You'd see it live and try it out yourself rather than him saying, "Hey, Yuan, this is how you do it. Follow these steps one by one." Mm. Yeah. And so in the same way, are you intentional about your own children's creativity and creative opportunities? Do you allow them into the dark room, or do you show them?
Oh, sure. Yeah, I'm trying, as I've learned. You shouldn't tell them how to do it, even though sometimes you need to address them to the right spot so they won't be hurt, but not telling them how to do it. I think that's the recipe of finding their own creativity, and not telling them how good they are, just telling them that it's good that you try. Or it's not the result which is the issue. It's the journey in a way.
The process. Yeah. Yuan, how would you characterize your photography before kids and after kids? Like, what's changed or what's stayed the same? What's improved? What's ended for you?
I would say that I'm trying to find a more emotional pattern in my way of photography. When it comes to text is really good in telling the whole spectra, the background story and so on. And the pictures are something that should be something extra to the text, not telling the same thing. You can actually express emotional, something which is really hard in text. You can express personality in a much more easier way in pictures than in text. I'm trying to find that way of telling a story for viewers and not only about me.
Yeah, I like that. 8 years into fatherhood, do you have some specific strategies that you use to preserve or protect creative time from parenting time? Is there anything that you do that helps you get into the studio or get on site for photography?
Yeah, I mean, when it doesn't come to photography, I'm trying to devote myself to something else. I've been going to a welding class, for example. Me and my friends, we have started a collective, a garage, actually. I'm rebuilding motorcycles, old ones, and start a garage together. I'm there every Wednesday to the midnight. And like, we hang out, we're all parents, and we talk about parenting, but also about motors. And this is something I learned. I didn't know anything about motors before, but I wanted to know something else except photography, because that took all my time in a way. I wanted to do something else and hang out with my friends who doesn't see photography as a passionate way. You can see something else. And it's been really good finding my creativity in another way, and not only for photography, but also in, for example, sewing your own motorcycle saddle.
That's so cool. So it's 13 other dads. Are they also creative? Are they also makers or, you know, artists and designers, photographers? Or
It's a group of different. There's ambulance driver, and there's a teacher. There's a graphic designer, computer storyist, but all are dads and kind of in the same age, the children. So it's kind of good because we can really hang out and talk about issues that involve parenting.
I love it. Is it the Odd Luck Garage?
Yeah,
is
that's that right. That's ours.
Brilliant. That's great to have this space, you know, to do this sort of thing in, and then this collective of people with at least one thing in common, which is being dads. And then the second thing in common is, well, let's rebuild these vintage motorcycles together. Yeah. It's quite nice.
I think that's how men often talk. When a conversation goes deeper, generally men needs to do something to distract themselves. Meanwhile, talking about feelings. That's what I've learned anyway. I'm not saying that everyone is like that, but some are not used to talk about feelings. And in that sense, building something meanwhile talking, that could be a solution.
I think you're right. Yeah, that's why people go out for fishing trips or hiking or building something together. Is you can still be physical and still have this conversation simultaneously. As you think ahead, your boys are getting older. What does balance look like for you? Like, how would you describe that future state of evenness in photography and fatherhood?
As my children becomes older, I realize that there's time coming towards me, time that I can consume in my way that I want to, because my children can do their own stuff, skateboarding, for example, on their own. So I think there will be more time for me to consume in the things that I want to. but also in terms of me and my wife as well, trying to find a pattern together. Now we're lacking really, really time for each other because there's often no time for it. And if there's time for it, we are so tired of being a parent, so we just ended up sleeping. But the time of talking, having a conversation without being abrupt. So I think that comes natural if you go on as a team and really talk about things and talks about how to develop the new way. We have been devoted to our children for quite a long time, and we will still. But then when they flown out and start their own life, I mean, you don't want to lose yourself because that's a new stage of life when you don't have anyone to take care of, except maybe your partner. And that will be devastating in many ways. I think that's something I'm also scared of. I've devoted so much time to my children and then they're off and you don't see them that often. And therefore, it's important to have a passionate thing that goes on beyond parenting. You don't want to lose yourself and being depressed.
Yeah. Having some things that help with those transitions, I think, are really important. Yeah, it's funny how you described your identity tied so closely to photography, and your kids kind of disrupt or challenge that. And now you're describing a future where your identity could be so closely tied to being a parent or a father that, you know, something's got to disrupt that or take that place for you as you move from these different roles, how much time and energy you focus on these lives. It's fascinating. Since the show is so focused on entrepreneurship and creativity and also being a father or a parent, do you have any practical advice, you know, for the photographers out there, for the creators out there who have just found out that they're about to have a child and everybody's telling them what to do? Do you have any suggestions for how you navigate these two identities of creative person and parent?
It helps quite much having someone to listen to, and that someone is listening to you at home. And be quite honest of your need and what you need for feeling good and trying to help each other in order to preserve it as well. Because it's a really short period of time if you look upon it in your whole life. So trying to find the way how you want to live and trying to get help from your partner with it and trying to also talk to your partner about how to find time for each other. When it was really difficult, me and my wife took turns. Monday and Tuesday are my days. I'm leaving them at school, picking them up at school, doing dinner, doing the home duty. And my wife is taking Wednesday and Thursday. And you can book meeting friends after work, Monday and Tuesday. You can do whatever you want to. It's a bonus, you coming home, but it's me and my responsibility of taking care of the kids for those days. And that was kind of good because you're not feeling guilt of hanging out with a friend with a beer after work, because you know that this is something we decided and my days will come 2 days later. Or just one day a week for each parent, because it's a lot about guilt as well. Leaving the other partner behind. We needed some spare time, both of us, but we both were guilty of being away from our kids or being away from each other.
Yeah, that's important. Calling it out and splitting it up. And just the way you said, well, I don't feel so bad because 2 days later, it's going to be my full duty and she'll have that break to use the time how she wants. Knowing that it's coming or that trade-off is happening alleviates some of the guilt or tension around having time to yourself or spending it the way you like.
Sure.
Away from the house or certain responsibilities. I think it's when you don't know when that's happening and it just feels like never ending that you start to feel some resentment or some frustration of like, well, when do I take a turn? You know, when do we switch?
Yeah.
But when you know that it's coming, it makes it all a little easier, maybe.
I think so.
I'm so grateful for the time and for your insight and for your body of work around Swedish dads. So thanks again for everything. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, me too. I mean, finding time for 1.5 hour talking, it brings the conversation a little bit longer and deeper.
Agree.
I like that.
Agree.
Yeah, and I'm looking forward to hear it.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode of the Dadwell Podcast. If you were inspired by what you heard, please take a few minutes to write a review on iTunes. As a new podcast, this helps a ton and would mean a lot to me. Dadwell is on Twitter, Instagram, Medium, and all the other relevant social networks. So visit dadwell.co to find links to all of those. While you're there, you can also subscribe to the Dadwell newsletter, check out some helpful resources and books, and even cop some fresh Dadwell merchandise. Additionally, you can support this project by becoming a patron via patreon.com/dadwell. That's patreon.com/dadwell. Thanks so much for listening. My name is Antonio Garcia, and we'll talk again soon. Cheers.